Misha Burson, writing in the San Francisco Chronicle, reminds us it can take many years and hard knocks for playwrights to prove their work artistically and financially viable. But with proof, the then 32-year-old dramatist David Auburn nailed the right equation with only his second full-length effort, a compelling and witty study of a gifted young woman coping with her own demons and the mental illness of her brilliant mathematician father. Proof is that rare American drama to score an immediate success in New York on and off Broadway. On first reading, leading Broadway director Daniel Sullivan found the play an unusually well-structured piece of storytelling with a kind of subtextual mystery that piqued his imagination. Sullivan agreed to stage the October 2000 premiere of Proof, and when his meticulous mounting transferred from off-Broadway's Manhattan Theater Club to Broadway's Walter Kerr Theater, it was showered with raves and awards. In fact, Auburn copped the triple crown of top writing honors for Proof, a 2001 Tony Award, a Pulitzer Prize, and a Drama Desk Award. "I was stunned at how much attention a Broadway play gets," said the clearly delighted but low-key and circumspect author, a recent graduate of the Juilliard School playwriting program. Auburn says he wrote the play as an attempt to merge his abiding interest in popular science and math into a modern-day romance and an exploration of how mental disease affects family dynamics. Proof unfolds on a back porch in Chicago, a city where Auburn, the son of an English professor, spent part of his childhood, attended the University of Chicago, and cut his teeth writing sketches for a Second City-style comedy troupe. He moved to New York to study at Juilliard and caught the interest of the Manhattan Theater Club with his first play, the absurdist comedy Skyscraper, when Proof was hatched. "The first image I got for it was of a woman sitting alone on a porch at night and an older man coming up to her and saying, 'Can't sleep?'" Auburn recalls. He decided that the pair were daughter and father, and both mathematicians. From there, his research led him to the sociological fact that there are still far fewer women in the math field than men, which is a recurring motif in Proof. And he boned up on the lives of such figures as John Forbes Nash Jr., a Nobel Prize-winning game theorist who, at the height of his career, was afflicted with schizophrenia. Nash was just one of numerous examples I've found of prodigious mathematicians who suffered mental breakdowns, Auburn says. "I don't think math necessarily makes you go crazy, that there's a causal link there, but some very edgy personalities are drawn to it as a way to find order in the world. And some stunning counterintuitive insights they come up with are in line with certain kinds of mental eccentricity. These are leaps of mind most people just can't make." Auburn added two more characters to the mix, Robert's older daughter, Claire, and an ambitious young math professor, Hal, who becomes a romantic interest and something of a nemesis for Catherine in a twisting plotline that involves a mysterious notebook filled with calculations. Proof has been identified as part of a mini-trend of contemporary plays dealing with math and science, but Auburn calls it a family drama with a math backdrop and points to intrinsic differences between his script and two other recent hits, Michael Frayn's Copenhagen, which speculates on the actions of real-life atomic scientists during World War II, and Tom Stoppard's Arcadia, a century-hopping fantasy involving math in its complex stratagems. Both Copenhagen and Arcadia are amazing, but the only similarity between them and Proof is that they all use scientific concepts as metaphors for creativity and for things happening between the characters, Auburn says. For math phobics, there is far less shop talk in Proof. "It was a balancing act I had to struggle with," says the author, whose own studies in the field ended with introductory calculus. "The more actual math I put in the play, the harder it was to sustain the mystery. But I think the math world is good territory to mark, and I'm surprised more plays haven't explored it. It's a competitive, eccentric, passionate subculture that's inherently dramatic in many ways. That from the San Francisco Chronicle. The King's College Theater Department will continue its 2025-26 season with Proof this weekend, March 26th, 27th, and 28th, and we had a visit from director Dave Reynolds and Greta Rogan, who has the role of Catherine. And we began with the notion of those plays that seem to have taken shape, like Copenhagen and Arcadia, involving math and science. Is this one of them?
Maybe on the surface it's not, but I would say the more we've sort of mined this script, I think there's a lot of beauty and poetry in the things that the character that Robert is talking about. You know, he talks about seeing patterns in the steam coming off a cup of coffee or in the leaves that the neighbor has raked. So I think there is an overlap in sort of the beauty of mathematics.
Yeah, I haven't been able to find it as easily, but our actor playing Robert, Noah McGinnis, they have more of an experience with it, so they can sort of see it a little bit more than I can. But I do know that there's a lot of it in the logistics of life. You can see where mathematics plays into it, but it just hasn't come as easily to me.
How do you talk about the play in terms of its premise?
So it's a really kind of a lean play, which is neat. It's four characters, and it's set in the early 2000s in Chicago, in one place, which is the back porch of their home. And the story sort of explores the nature of genius and how that sort of teeters on madness at the same time. And it sort of deals with the imprint that parents leave on their kids and whether or not the kids are happy about that imprint, or, you know, if they want to run from that imprint, or, you know, just how it's really a story. I mean, I think on the outset, people think it's a story about math, and it certainly is a story about math, but it is, I think, more a story about family. I think more than anything, it's a story about family and legacy and kind of finding out who you are through the lens of what you've gotten from your parents.
Yeah, the familial aspect of it is certainly very important. The identity of it, Catherine finding her identity now that she has a chance to. I find a lot of the topic of gender has left an impression on my performance. It's a sort of a key in a few scenes of the show. But the father-daughter relationship between Robert and Catherine are what holds the key to the play, I think.
Yeah, and also I think, you know, even more on the gender idea is, play was written in the early 2000s, and I think it's probably still true that Catherine is a mathematical genius, but people don't have an easy time believing that because, you know, she's a woman, and that's part of what's being talked about here is, you know, there's lots of great lines about, like, all you guys at the conferences and you guys, and part of it, I think, is her struggling with that, right? But also, I think the playwright's making a really strong point there as well.
Yeah. David Auburn draws a lot of parallels between Catherine and Sophie Germain, who's a mathematician who found a lot of difficulty in her field because of her gender. So there's that direct connection, and there is a lot of stuff in between Catherine and Hal that imply that some of the disbelief around her genius might be because of her gender, but it is also just because she's living under the shadow of her father, who is so brilliant, and how could two brilliant people coexist in the same sphere? How could they come so close to each other? And she even feels that tension herself. How could she ever be as great as her father, even outside of her work, of just being a person?
Yeah, and I guess to put a finer point on the premise, like, we could give some of it away. The play's almost 30 years old now. Yeah, so basically, you find out very early on that Catherine's having a conversation with her father, and you find out in the first scene that that's a hallucination, that he actually died, and the next day is the day of his funeral. So part of it is her struggling with her own concerns about mental illness, because he had significant mental illness, and the play sort of unfolds. There's a former student of his who has been coming to the house to go through all of these notebooks that he'd been writing in just to see if there's anything, because he was a brilliant mathematician. You know, and so there's a love interest there in the story with Catherine and Hal. And there's an older sister who's there. You know, one of the things is that Catherine isn't given a lot of agency. People make decisions for her a lot. You know, and then you come to find out at the end of Act One that Hal, the student, finds this brilliant proof that is amazing and, you know, should be published immediately. And then the cliffhanger at the end of Act One is, you know, who found it? And Catherine says, I didn't find it.
I wrote it.
Dun, dun, dun. Mm-hmm. Right. And then, you know, the rest of the story sort of unfolds with whether or not people believe that that's true. The playwright never actually answers the question, which is, I think, great. You know, Act Two also has a couple of flashbacks with Robert coming back. You see his relationship with Catherine being developed. You see his descent into more of his own mental health issues. We have a very talented ensemble of actors, but I think this is very much Catherine's story. It's her journey to, I think, find her own agency and find, you know, who she is and not run from or hide from who she is.
Yeah. She's never really been given an opportunity to explore herself because she's been so busy taking care of her father. And now, at a strange time in her life, when people her age were finding themselves at 18, 19 in college, she's finding herself at 25, and everybody around her has already sort of hit that mark.
In some of the flashbacks, she's 21. She's going back to school, but, you know, her father's been doing well, so she can go back to school. But then you see that actually he's not doing well. And so then the story picks up in the present time is 4 years after that, where she's 25 and has had a couple of years or a year of studies at Northwestern. And that's another reason why Hal, the now math professor, doesn't believe she could have possibly written this. She's got great lines of, like, you know, my education wasn't at Northwestern. I was living in this house for 25 years. So there's a lot. It's the kind of play that I love to do, don't always get the opportunity to do, but, like, you know, small cast, really getting to dive in on some modern realism. So that's been great.
As Catherine, do you find yourself talking out loud to yourself to try to puzzle out what you're thinking or what's happening to you and whether you want to keep going in the field of mathematics?
Yeah, I mean, for her, it's sort of a tricky slope. It doesn't even initially seem like she wants to continue in the field. It seems like this burden to her that she saw her father struggle with it and the brilliance that it seemed, how the brilliance seemed to bring him a lot of baggage. But it sort of seems to be connected to the connection she's gotten with Hal and wanting to deepen that connection with her father, even though he's passed away. We've sort of talked about how it, for Robert and Catherine, it's not totally, it's sort of just how they're expressing themselves. It just comes so naturally to them that it's not really, it's not a job for them like it is for Hal. It's just sort of what happens, how they process their life.
And there was a quote that I found, I'll paraphrase it, that I use in my director's notes that I really sums up a lot of this for me. It's a Nietzsche quote. It was something along the lines of, "And those who were seen dancing were thought insane by those who couldn't hear the music." So it's that idea that, like, what really is madness? In my opinion, like, so Robert and Catherine can hear the music. The math and stuff is so far beyond my capacity to understand, and probably most people's capacity to understand, that it might seem like madness. Now, I think that there is real debilitating things that happen with Robert, and some of that happens with Catherine to some degree. But we talked a lot about that. It's not, I don't think it's the math that drives them there. I think it's humanity, right? I think it's just a thing that people deal with. So I think that was a really interesting point, that the math is beautiful, and I don't think the math is the cause of this madness, but she struggles with it in the same way that he does. But I don't know. I think what's interesting is that both the math and the madness are things that Catherine has not been given agency from other people as well. You know, it's because Robert was like this that you're like this. It's not because you are who you are, right? Which I think is a big reason why Catherine's upset. One of the questions that you asked Greta, which I thought of, like, do you talk to yourself? So when you really read into that first scene, she's having this whole conversation with her dad, who's not there, right? Like, it ends with him saying, the whole thing is basically like, well, am I crazy? And he's like, no, crazy people don't ask if they're crazy. then he says, well, but I am also dead, right? So, like, this whole conversation is happening inside your head, mm-hmm. right? So it is you talking to yourself, but I think it's a really interesting way that Auburn sets up the entire piece.
Yeah, we sort of talked about this once at rehearsal. It's her thinking of Robert, but it's her own mind, and it's her trying to convince herself that she isn't crazy. This conversation where he's telling her, no, crazy people can't even think about if they're crazy, just doesn't come to their mind.
Right, and she calls him out on it, which mm-hmm. is great, right? 'Cause, so she's calling herself out on it. And then we pick up immediately in the present day, the lights shift, and then Hal comes in with the notebooks. All right, well, I'm done for the night. So the way the play is written, I think, is really fun to take apart.
Let's look at the title, Proof. There surely are many layers. Certainly the proof that Catherine says she's written, proof that she did or didn't write it, proof that she's stable or not stable.
One thing that my castmates and I have argued about is whether or not Catherine is crazy, whether or not she's as crazy as Robert was, whether or not Robert was crazy. And one thing I believe very strongly about this play is that everything that her sister is convinced of reflects her being crazy is simply her being depressed, her at this hard part of her life where she's been taking care of her father for years, and now she's grieving his loss. She's had a complicated few years, an even more complicated week. All of that is the product of her being depressed, and she's trying to prove to her sister and later to Hal that she is fully capable of doing this work and being her own independent human. And that's, we once had a really long conversation with Noah McGinnis about what the title Proof means, aside from it just being about the proofs, about it actually being about proving yourself and your capabilities to other people.
You spoke about the father-daughter relationship at the start, but is there an absence or a presence of a mother?
I think we've made it one. If I remember correctly, there's only really one line. There's something along the lines of when her and her sister are talking, there's a line about, well, that was, you know, before mom died or something, right?
Yeah, I say after mom died.
Right. So we've sort of created this character. I've named her Dolores. People like fight about that.
I don't like it.
I like it. So it doesn't matter. Yeah, so we've kind of created this backstory. So Robert was beloved by all his students. Like 40 people show up to his funeral and they're at the house, you know, to talk about how his students worshipped him and how he was a really well-liked professorial academic type. So we kind of created this character who we say was a very strong-willed feminist literature professor who definitely also imprinted on her girls. And I think it's actually been really kind of great because it's created this dynamic for, I think, you and for Finch, who's playing Claire, to draw from this character that is sort of not a presence. But I think we talk a lot about the fact there's not a whole lot about exposition as to Robert started having his episodes when he was in his mid-20s, and the play ends with him being in his 50s. So 25 years on and off, and the mom has only been gone for, what, 5-6 years, we figured out, mm-hmm. right? So I would have to think that Catherine learned a lot about her caregiving from mom.
Yeah. We've talked a bit about how Claire doesn't really, the sister doesn't understand what it's like to take care of Robert. So when she comes back for the funeral, her presence is a little jarring because she's never had the experience of it, and that the mother that would have been there was a large presence for Claire's childhood, but not necessarily for Catherine's. And her absence sort of left that mark, and now one of them's got to take care of Robert, and only Catherine was the one that learned from her mother on how to do it.
Yeah, I think there's also a great dynamic there with the sisters of, like, you know, Catherine is the one who's home with Robert on a daily basis taking care of him, and so she's got some real resentment towards Claire, who left to go to New York and is living her life and having her career. But Claire points out, I was the one living in a studio apartment in Brooklyn paying the mortgage on this 3-bedroom house, so you guys could be here. So there's resentment. It's like a real family drama, and it's very real, and it's really fun to take that apart. It's fun to do the supernatural Shakespeare's and all that kind of stuff, but like to dive into this has been, I think, really opening a lot of doors for you guys as actors.
Yeah. It's every character feels like someone you could meet on the street and talk to. I think especially around here, I talk about Catherine, I assign her a lot of traits, and I say, I think she's someone that you knew in high school, and a few years pass, and someone tells you, hey, did you hear about what Catherine's doing? And you go, oh, God, but that makes sense for her. She was always kind of a loose one.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I've said to these guys, these are the, you know, Catherine is like who I went to college with. Like this archetype is the people that I was hanging out with at parties and in college, right? So, and there is something, I don't, when you said this, I just like popped in my head. I've always seen this weird connection with this area in Chicago. There's a weird Chicago and Northeastern Pennsylvania connection. I think it's the blue collar working class area. And there is something about, there's a beloved fatalism to people that live here, right? And I think I see that with these people quite a bit. Like, we can all talk bad about where we live, but if you're not from here, you better not talk bad about where we're from, kind of. You mm-hmm. know?
In terms of whether a show speaks to us today, I'd imagine that there is much more discussion of dementia and Alzheimer's and the like now than when Proof was written. Are the family dynamics primary and the mental problems a kind of pretext for examining those interrelations?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that, you know, David Auburn never defines exactly what is wrong with Robert. I think dementia is probably definitely a sort of broad symptom of some of the things. You know, Catherine describes what it was like in the hard times when she's having to bring hundreds of library books home because he's looking for messages in Dewey Decimal Systems and how he wasn't really bathing or taking care of his hygiene, things along those lines. But I think it really does explore what families deal with when that becomes a part of life. There's a lot of talk about, you know, we should have put him in an assisted living facility. And Catherine says, no, he had to be here. He had to be close to school. He had to be close to his students. And I think that's a really realistic everyday thing that people deal with. I don't know if it speaks. I don't think it goes too deep into the specifics of what he was. You never actually see Robert having an episode. You see the very beginning of his descent into one. But I think it deals more with the family's burden of dealing with things like that.
Yeah, I would agree. Even for Catherine, you're beginning to see Robert, for him, the signs of his illness started when he was in his mid-20s. And so now you're seeing her at that age and you're seeing some signs of that. But even with her, you're not getting a ton of detail on what's actually happening. It's about how it impacts the family.
Let's go back to mathematics. Could this have been a play about chemistry instead, or some other science? Certainly not literature. Again, why would you think Auburn settled on mathematics?
It's hard for me personally to speak about the math because I'm so disconnected from it. But from what I understand, you can find how math works in everyday life all around you, and it's the rhythm of it, the certainty of it that makes it so unique. I think I mentioned once during one of our in-depth conversations over this that math is unique in a way that I think music is unique, in that it's its own language. And so, like, literature, and I'm a literature major, so I love literature, but math and music, it's now you are learning this separate language and how to navigate it in your own language in your life and applying it to the outside life.
I think it's also, we found out in one of our in-depth conversations, of which there were many, Noah McGinnis shared that his mom is actually a mathematician, and that she had, I'm sure I'll get this quote sort of wrong, but the gist of the quote basically is like, a mathematician looks everywhere to find the number, which was like that idea of math is all around us, but only some people can see it. So you can explain, I think it's that, you know, I think that goes to the title too. I think it's like these things that seemingly are unexplainable, you can explain with mathematics, right? We talked about, you know, Schrodinger's cat and all that stuff, and, you know, the uncertainty principle and how there's math to back all of that up, but it's math that's just so unfathomable to most people. But the people that can see that really, I think, are seeing something that in ancient times you would think like it would be a mystic, like how people can understand that complexity of the universe.
Yeah, I joked with a friend of mine today, just because math is so far out of my realm. I looked at their homework and I said, maybe the math did drive Catherine crazy.
You said the play takes place on the porch, so it is a one set show?
Yep. It's all on their back porch. And it's a wonderful, realistic set designed by our assistant tech director and resident designer, AJ Bonk. We have student designers in sound and lights and costumes. And it's cool. We don't really dive this deep into realism all that often. And it's fun, but it's also daunting because you never really know when you're done. Because you're like, you know, we need to put a light switch cover on that.
We need more birds.
We need more bird sounds. We need that lamp has to be 1% brighter. It's tricky that way to know when you're finished. And we're definitely not there yet.
Tell us how and when we can see the show.
Sure. So it's at the George P. Maffei II Theater at King's College. You can get tickets by visiting kings.edu, and we have tickets on there, or onthestage.com. It runs this Thursday through Sunday with matinees on Saturday and Sunday. So come see it.
Dave Reynolds, Theater Department Chair and Director of the King's College production of Proof by David Auburn, and Greta Rogan, who has the role of Catherine, speaking about the Pulitzer Prize-winning drama that opens this Thursday, March 26th, running through March 29th, shows the 26th, 27th, and 28th at 7:30 p.m., with matinees March 28th and 29th at 2 at the George P. Maffei Second Theater, 133 North River Street on the King's College campus in Wilkes-Barre. For more information, on the web, kings.edu, kings.edu, and for tickets, onthestage.tickets/kings-college-theater, onthestage.tickets/kings-college-theater, and theater is spelled T-H-E-A-T-R-E. Proof, presented by the King's College Department of Theater, and that's March 26th through the 29th, shows the 26th, 27th, and 28th at 7:30 p.m., with matinees March 28th and 29th at 2 p.m. at the George P. Maffei Second Theater, 133 North River Street in Wilkes-Barre.